The three people running northward through moon shadows in the Forbidden Forest were strung out along almost half a kilometer. The last runner in the line ran less than 100 meters ahead of the pursuing D-wolves. The animals could be heard yelping and panting in their eagerness, the way they do when they have the prey in sight. With first moon almost directly overhead, it was quite light in the forest, and, although these were the higher latitudes of Arrakis, it was still warm from the heat of a summer day. The nightly drift of air from the last desert of the Serir carried resin smells and the damp exhalations of the duff underfoot. Now and again, a breeze from the Kynes Sea beyond the Serir drifted across the runner's tracks with hints of salt and fishes. By a quirk of fate, the last runner was called Ulot, which in the Fremen tongue means beloved straggler. Ulot was short in stature and with a tendency to fat, which had placed an extra dieting burden on him in training for this venture. Even when slimmed down for their desperate run, his face remained round, the large brown eyes vulnerable in that suggestion of too much flesh. To Ulot it was obvious that he could not run much farther. He panted and wheezed. Occasionally he staggered. But he did not call out to his companions. He knew they could not help him. All of them had taken the same oath, knowing they had no defenses except the old virtues and Fremen loyalties. This remained true even though everything that once had been Fremen had now a museum quality, rote recitals learned from Museum Fremen. It was Fremen loyalty that kept Ulot silent in the full awareness of his doom. A fine display of the ancient qualities, and rather pitiful when none of the runners had any but book knowledge and the legends of the oral history about the virtues they aped. The D-wolves ran close behind Ulot, giant gray figures almost man-height at the shoulders. They leaped and whined in their eagerness, heads lifted, eyes focused on the moon-betrayed figure of their quarry. A root caught Ulot's left foot, and he almost fell. This gave him renewed energy. He put on a burst of speed, gaining perhaps a wolf length on his pursuers. His arms pumped. He breathed noisily through his open mouth. The D-wolves did not change pace. They were silver shadows which went flick-flick through the loud green smells of their forest. They knew they had won. It was a familiar experience. Again Ulot stumbled. He caught his balance against a sapling and continued his panting flight, gasping, his legs trembling in rebellion against these demands. No energy remained for another burst of speed. One of the D-wolves, a large female, moved out on Ulot's left flank. She swerved inward and leaped across his path. Giant fangs ripped Ulot's shoulder and staggered him, but he did not fall. The pungency of blood was added to the forest smells. A smaller male caught his right hip, and at last Ulot fell, screaming. The pack pounced, and his screams were cut off in abrupt finality. Not stopping to feed, the D-wolves again took up the chase. Their noses probed the forest floor and the vagrant eddies in the air, scenting the warm tracery of two more running humans. The next runner in the line was named Kuteg, an old and honorable name on Arrakis, a name from the Dune times. An ancestor had served Siege Tabor as master of the Death Stills, but that was more than 3,000 years lost in a past which many no longer believed. Kuteg ran with the long strides of a tall and slender body, which seemed perfectly fitted to such exertion. Long black hair streamed back from his aquiline features. As with his companions, he wore a black running suit of tightly knitted cotton. It revealed the workings of his buttocks and stringy thighs, the deep and steady rhythm of his breathing. Only his pace, which was markedly slow for Kuteg, betrayed the fact that he had injured his right knee coming down from the man-made precipices which girdled the God Emperor's Citadel Fortress in the Serir. Kuteg heard Ulot's screams, the abrupt and potent silence, then the renewed chase yelps of the D-wolves. He tried not to let his mind create the image of another friend being slain by Leto's monster guardians, but imagination worked its sorcery on him. Kuteg thought a curse against the tyrant, but wasted no breath to voice it. There remained a chance that he could reach the sanctuary of the Idaho River. Kuteg knew what his friends thought about him, even Siona. He had always been known as a conservative. Even as a child he had saved his energy until it counted most, parceling out his reserves like a miser. In spite of the injured knee, Kuteg increased his pace. He knew the river was near. His injury had gone beyond agony into a steady flame which filled his entire leg and side with its burning. He knew the limits of his endurance. He knew also that Siona should be almost at the water. The fastest runner of them all, she carried the sealed packet and, in it, the things they had stolen from the fortress in the Serir. Kuteg focused his thoughts on that packet as he ran.
Save it, Siona! Use it to destroy him!
The eager whining of the D-wolves penetrated Kuteg's consciousness. They were too close. He knew then that he would not escape.
But Siona must escape!
He risked a backward glance and saw one of the wolves move to flank him. The pattern of their attack plan imprinted itself on his awareness. As the flanking wolf leaped, Kuteg also leaped. Placing a tree between himself and the pack, he ducked beneath the flanking wolf, grasped one of its hind legs in both hands, and, without stopping, whirled the captive wolf as a flail which scattered the others. Finding the creature not as heavy as he had expected, almost welcoming the change of action, he flailed his living bludgeon at the attackers in a dervish whirl which brought two of them down in a crash of skulls. But he could not guard every side. A lean male caught him in the back, hurling him against a tree, and he lost his bludgeon.
"Go!" he screamed.
The pack bored in, and Kuteg caught the throat of the lean male in his teeth. He bit down with every gram of his final desperation. Wolf blood spurted over his face, blinding him. Rolling without any knowledge of where he went, Kuteg grappled another wolf. Part of the pack dissolved into a yelping, whirling mob, some turning against their own injured. Most of the pack remained intent on the quarry, though. Teeth ripped Kuteg's throat from both sides. Siona, too, had heard Ulot scream. Then the unmistakable silence followed by the yelping of the pack as the wolves resumed the chase. Such anger filled her that she felt she might explode with it. Ulot had been included in this venture because of his analytical ability, his way of seeing a whole from only a few parts. It had been Ulot who, taking the inevitable magnifier from his kit, had examined the two strange volumes they had found in with the Citadel's plans.
"I think it's a cipher," Ulot had said.
And Roddy, poor Roddy, who had been the first of their team to die, Roddy had said,
"We can't afford the extra weight. Throw them away."
Ulot had objected,
"Unimportant things aren't concealed this way."
Kuteg had joined Roddy.
"We came for the Citadel plans, and we have them. Those things are too heavy."
But Siona had agreed with Ulot.
"I will carry them."
That had ended the argument.
Poor Ulot.
They had all known him as the worst runner in the team. Ulot was slow in most things, but the clarity of his mind could not be denied.
"He is trustworthy."
Ulot had been trustworthy. Siona mastered her anger and used its energy to increase her pace. Trees whipped past her in the moonlight. She had entered that timeless void of the running when there was nothing else but her own movements, her own body doing what it had been conditioned to do. Men thought her beautiful when she ran. Siona knew this. Her long, dark hair was tied tightly to keep it from whipping in the wind of her passage. She had accused Kuteg of foolishness when he had refused to copy her style.
"Where is Kuteg?"
Her hair was not like Kuteg's. It was that deep brown which is sometimes confused with black, but is not truly black, not like Kuteg's at all. In the way jeans occasionally do, her features copied those of a long-dead ancestor, gently oval and with a generous mouth, eyes of alert awareness above a small nose. Her body had grown lanky from years of running, but it sent strong sexual signals to the males around her.
"Where is Kuteg?"
The wolf pack had fallen silent, and this filled her with alarm. They had done that before bringing down Roddy. It had been the same when they got Satus. She told herself the silence could mean other things. Kuteg, too, was silent and strong. The injury had not appeared to bother him too much. Siona began to feel pain in her chest, the gasping to come which she knew well from the long kilometers of training. Perspiration still poured down her body under the thin black running garment. The kit, with its precious contents sealed against the river passage ahead, rode high on her back. She thought about the Citadel charts folded there.
Where does Leto hide his hoard of spice?
It had to be somewhere within the Citadel. It had to be. Somewhere in the charts there would be a clue. The Melange spice for which the Bene Gesserit, the Guild, and all the others hungered. That was a prize worth this risk. And those two cryptic volumes. Kuteg had been right in one thing. Redulian crystal paper was heavy. But she shared Ulot's excitement. Something important was concealed in those lines of cipher. Once more the eager chase yelps of the wolves sounded in the forest behind her.
"Run, Kuteg! Run!"
Now, just ahead of her through the trees, she could see the wide cleared strip which bordered the Idaho River. She glimpsed the moon brightness on water beyond the clearing.
"Run, Kuteg!"
She longed for a sound from Kuteg, any sound. Only the two of them remain now from the 11 who had started the run. 9 had paid for this venture with their lives. Radi, Aline, Ulat, Setus, Inaneg, Onamau, Hutai, Memar, and Awala. Siona thought their names, and with each sent a silent prayer to the old gods, not to the tyrant Leto. Especially she prayed to Shai-Hulud.
"I pray to Shai-Hulud, who lives in the sand."
Abruptly she was out of the forest and onto the moon-bright stretch of mowed ground along the river. Straight ahead, beyond a narrow shingle of beach, the water beckoned to her. The beach was silver against the oily flow. A loud yell from back in the trees almost made her falter. She recognized Kuteg's voice above the wild wolf sounds. Kuteg called out to her without name, an unmistakable cry with one word containing countless conversations, a message of death and life.
"Go!"
The pack sounds took on a terrible commotion of frenzied yelps, but nothing more from Kuteg. She knew then how Kuteg was spending the last energies of his life.
"Delaying them to help me escape."
Obeying Kuteg's cry, she dashed to the river's edge and plunged headfirst into the water. The river was a freezing shock after the heat of the run. It stunned her for a moment, and she floundered outward, struggling to swim and regain her breath. The precious kit floated and bumped against the back of her head. The Idaho River was not wide here, no more than 50 meters, a gently sweeping curve with sandy indentations, fringed by roots and shelving banks of lush reeds and grass, where the water refused to stay in the straight lines Leto's engineers had designed. Siona was strengthened by the knowledge that the D-wolves had been conditioned to stop at the water. Their territorial boundaries had been drawn, the river on this side and the desert wall on the other side. Still, she swam the last few meters underwater and surfaced in the shadows of a cut bank before turning and looking back. The wolf pack stood ranged along the bank, all except one which had come down to the river's edge. It leaned forward with its forefeet almost into the flow. She heard it whine. Siona knew the wolf saw her. No doubt of that. D-wolves were noted for their keen eyesight. They were gaze hounds in the ancestry of Leto's forest guardians, and he bred the wolves for their eyesight. She wondered if this once the wolves might break through their conditioning. They were mostly sight hunters. If that one wolf at the river's edge should enter the water, all might follow. Siona held her breath. She felt the dragging of exhaustion. They had come almost 30 kilometers, the last half of it with the D-wolves close behind. The wolf at the river's edge whined once more, then leaped back up to its companions. At some silent signal, they turned and loped back into the forest. Siona knew where they would go. D-wolves were allowed to eat anything they brought down in the Forbidden Forest. Everyone knew this. It was why the wolves roamed the forest, the guardians of the Serere.
"You'll pay for this, Leto," she whispered.
It was a low sound, her voice, very close to the quiet rustling of the water against the reeds just behind her.
"You'll pay for Ulat, for Kuteg, and for all the others. You'll pay."
She pushed outward gently and drifted with the current until her feet met the first shelving of a narrow beach. Slowly, her body dragged down by fatigue, she climbed from the water and paused to check that the sealed contents of her kit had remained dry. The seal was unbroken. She stared at it a moment in the moonlight, then lifted her gaze to the forest wall across the river.
"The price we paid. 10 dear friends.
Tears glimmered in her eyes, but she had the stuff of the ancient Fremen, and her tears were few. The venture across the river, directly through the forest while the wolves patrolled the northern boundaries, then across the last desert of the Serere and over the citadel's ramparts, all of this already was assuming dream proportions in her mind. Even the flight from the wolves, which she had anticipated because it was a certainty that the guardian pack would cross the track of the invaders and be waiting. All a dream. It was the past.
"I escaped."
She restored the kit with its sealed packet and fastened it once more against her back.
"I have broken through your defenses, Leto."
Siona thought then about the cryptic volumes. She felt certain that something hidden in those lines of cipher would open the way for her revenge.
"I will destroy you, Leto."
"Not,
we will destroy you."
That was not Siona's way. She would do it herself. She turned and strode toward the orchards beyond the river's mowed border. As she walked, she repeated her oath, adding to it aloud the old Fremen formula which terminated in her full name.
"Siona ibn Fuad al-Saifa Atreides, it is who curses you, Leto. You will pay in full."